Welcome to this audio version of Rotary Magazine. My name is Dave King and I'm the editor of this publication, and I'm delighted that you've joined us for this very first edition. Now, the June-July issue is filled with an array of interesting stories. We take an in-depth look at literacy. We spotlight a food waste project in North London. We look at the Jaipur Lim Initiative in India. And we take a look back at Volunteer Expo, which is a new national event to encourage people to get involved in volunteering while celebrating the impact of charities, not-for-profits and community organisations. And as you'll remember, all this took place back in May. You'll also hear a celebration of the Rotary Young Citizens winners, plus a heartwarming tribute to His Royal Highness the Duke of Edinburgh, who was a true friend of Rotary. And so, as you listen to these stories, and hopefully feel motivated by what you hear, please feel free to share them.
Easy. Britain has around 8 million adults who are functionally illiterate. One in five of the population is so poor at reading and writing that they struggle to read a medicine label or use a checkbook. So what's being done? By editor Dave King. Ginny Williams-Ellis was once a literacy tutor at Dorchester Prison in Dorset. The cramped Victorian buildings used to house around 300 male prisoners before shutting in 2014. Ginny was responsible for running the Shannon Trust's prisoner-to-prisoner reading program, where she saw how a confidential, one-to-one approach encouraged prisoners to seek support and successfully learn to read. Many were deeply ashamed that they couldn't read. Some carried bad memories of school. They feared returning to a classroom setting, reawakening old feelings of failure. But by working instead with a dedicated coach, this supportive and trusting bond developed the prisoner's confidence and a motivation to complete the course. Recognising there was no similar provision for adults in the community, Ginny set up the first Read Easy group in Dorset, using volunteers to work one-to-one with new readers. Read Easy UK was established the following year as an umbrella body to support other volunteers wanting to set up groups in their communities. There are now 36 affiliated Read Easy groups across England, with another 13 in development, involving over 1,000 volunteers. A number of these groups are supported by Rotary clubs. With more than 2.4 million adults in England who can barely read or can't read at all, Ginny acknowledged there's so much more to do to address the need. She said, "Cuts in government funding since 2010 mean that in many areas there are now no adult education classes for those with the lowest literacy levels. We feel that our one-to-one approach is much more effective than such classes, because most adults are too embarrassed to join a group. We're excited to have created a model that gives people just the support they need, but we now need more volunteers to help roll it out. Without our amazing volunteers who set up and run our local groups, we couldn't operate." Steve Peckham is the team leader for Read Easy Wyre Forest in Worcestershire, which has been supported financially by Rotary clubs in Bewdley and Kidderminster. They were established in 2018 with Rotary support, recruiting 10 reading coaches from a variety of backgrounds. "Adults who struggle with reading don't read articles, leaflets, posters or social media items posted about help with reading," explained Steve. "Mainly they hear by word of mouth, from loved ones, from advice centres, libraries and colleges, from agencies like job centres, housing association job coaches and representatives from other voluntary and statutory agencies. It takes courage, after perhaps hiding your inability to read for decades, to make that call to get help." The Read Easy Wyre Forest team uses a room at a local Sainsbury's store, also a church, a theatre office, and office space at two libraries. Reader and coach meet up for 2 half-hour sessions per week. It's this one-to-one format that's so attractive for new adult readers, explained Steve. Many of them would avoid any group setting, either through lack of confidence or too many memories of failure and possibly ridicule at school. A phonics-based approach to learning to read is used by working through a series of 5 manuals. The Turning Pages manuals have been produced for adults by the Shannon Trust and are backed up by suitable reading books. The service is free, with readers moving at their own pace. There's no limit on the time it takes to graduate, but most readers take around 12 to 15 months, some longer, some shorter. For adults who struggle to read, the coronavirus pandemic has left them feeling more isolated than ever before and in need of ReadEasy's service. Homeschooling children has been a big enough challenge for many parents with good literacy skills, but for those who can't read their 7-year-old child's storybook or understand communications from teachers, it's proven impossible. Steve admitted that COVID-19 arrived just as they were getting into their stride in their second full year of operation. That brought a halt to face-to-face reading sessions. However, different ReadEasy groups around the country have travelled through the restrictions in different ways. Some coaches and readers have progressed using Zoom, FaceTime, WhatsApp, or even good old-fashioned telephone calls. David, a reader from Plymouth, revealed that had he not continued with his sessions during the lockdown, not only would he have forgotten everything he'd learned, but he probably would have given up altogether. Instead, he's completed 2 training manuals in the last 6 months, with all sessions taking place through WhatsApp. ReadEasy Wire Forest's working model is very lean. Its annual running costs are around £3,000 a year, depending on the numbers of reading manuals bought and coach training sessions held. With the use of donated premises and coaching being carried out by volunteers, they have no major overheads. Steve added, "Our group has been lucky to have the vital support of both Kidderminster and Bewdley Rotary Clubs, and we hope that continues. Once we can operate safely again, our team is ready to bounce back, helping to change the lives of adults who struggle with their reading." For more information, visit rotarygbi.org/magazine. Good food and conversation. Rotarians in North London have overcome the challenges of coronavirus to work with a charity using surplus food to provide meals for the needy. By editor Dave King. Over the past 12 months of the coronavirus pandemic, food banks have come under the most extreme of pressures. Rotary clubs nationwide have responded with cash, volunteering, and even the pioneering Rotary for Food Bank scheme in the Midlands and South Yorkshire. Food Cycle is not a food bank. Instead, the charity aims to tackle food waste, food poverty and loneliness by using donated surplus food to provide communal, hot, nutritious meals to those who want them. In London, Rotarians have been active over the past year working with Food Cycle, which provides a cooked meal at least once a week. Edgware and Stanmore Rotary has been involved since I started volunteering about 4 years ago, explained Peter Bradley. Being a foodie, it was an ideal organisation for me, which ticked so many Rotary boxes. It works well with our service ethos and introduces younger volunteers to Rotary through the project, people who had previously never heard of us. The model is a simple one. Volunteers collect surplus food, which would otherwise be thrown away or go to waste, from local supermarkets and small shops. The food is always within the sell-by date and is checked for freshness. The amount of surplus food available is often mind-boggling, added Peter, who works with a project based at Finsbury Park in North London. In just a few short hours from collection, volunteers have transformed these ingredients into a delicious 3-course vegetarian meal ready for that day's guests. The meals are cooked from scratch and often include up to 5 portions of fruit and vegetables. Any leftover portions of food are offered to the guests for them to take home. Guests and volunteers sit together to eat and talk. The personal stories that often emerge can be humbling, but also exhilarating. Guests come from all sorts of backgrounds. refugees, the homeless, asylum seekers, or simply elderly and lonely. Some may not have spoken to anyone for a whole week or more. COVID-19 has changed the landscape entirely. At first, when the initial lockdown was introduced a year ago, everything came to a standstill. However, the need for food supplies doesn't go away. In North London, Food Cycle got up and running pretty quickly. Instead of hosting meals, food parcels were distributed weekly. Fresh fruit and vegetables, along with donated cooked meals from Top Restaurant, were delivered to the community centre in Finsbury Park to be bagged up, and a team of volunteers, including members of Arsenal Football Club, distributed them. One of the aims of Food Cycle, apart from tackling food waste and food poverty, is tackling loneliness. So a new service was started. Volunteers phoned food parcel recipients for a chat once a week, which was a great boost to those who were isolating and to those volunteering. As restrictions began to ease, explained Peter, there was a great desire to get back cooking. As the premises were huge and we had a large kitchen, a team of 6 volunteers cooked takeaway meals, which were collected each week from the community centre. Despite these uncertain times, the Food Cycle projects are still operating nationwide. They're still cooking, handing out meals, and volunteers continue to make weekly calls, providing much-needed food and conversation to people within our communities. This year, Food Cycle has rescued over 200 tonnes of surplus food, which equates to more than 440,000 meals for vulnerable people. According to Food Cycle, 66% of guests worry about their food running out, 65% are forced to skip meals, and 26% cannot work due to health problems. After coming to Food Cycle, 79% say they feel more part of the community, 76% eat more fruit and vegetables, 77% say they've made new friends. From a Rotary perspective, added Peter, volunteering or helping in other ways with Food Cycle exemplifies Rotary's core values. Rotarians who have been introduced to Food Cycle have become enthusiastic supporters, in particular, Rotaractors. Clearly, not everyone is as enthusiastic about cooking as I am, but there are plenty of other volunteer activities. Food Cycle needs people to lay tables, sit and chat, welcome guests, serve meals, and of course, help clear up. Also, Rotarians with transport are needed to collect food from shops and supermarkets. Give someone a limb, you give them a life. The gift of mobility is the gift of life. Rotary Jaipur Limb has been able to make that difference in India and across the world for more than 35 years. By editor Dave King. Margaret Webb remembers the girl well, receiving treatment at Bangalore Peenyar Rotary Club's annual limb camp in the Indian city of Bangalore. It was Margaret's first visit to India when she caught sight of this attractive young woman in her late teens with dark locks tied back in a bun. She was lying on a bed, unable to walk, with 2 helpers measuring and fitting her for calipers to give strength to her legs, made useless by polio. This young woman, with a whole life in front of her, had never walked before. Later that day, Margaret saw the same 2 helpers, the young woman between them, her arms around their shoulders, walking towards her with the aid of her calipers, for the first time in her life. "I remember seeing a smile and the joy on her face," recalls Margaret. "I'll never forget that moment. It was the joy that at last she was going to be like other people." This was happening in Bangalore through the selfless service of local Rotarians. But the technology was from the remarkable limb-making workshops of Bhagwan Mahavir Viklan Sahyata Samiti, or BMVSS, at the Sawai Man Singh Hospital in Jaipur in the Indian state of Rajasthan. For it's here that the gift of life has been given to thousands of limbless men and women through BMVSS and through the efforts of Rotary Jaipur Limb at other locations throughout India and Africa. Margaret, who's a member of Bishop Stortford Rotary Club in Hertfordshire, has been the charity's secretary since 2005, following the death of her husband John, who had previously held that role. It was Peter Betteridge from Godalming Rotary in Surrey who visited the Jaipur workshops in 1984 with wife Jessamine and was astonished to see so many limbless people being treated. Many had travelled vast distances by all means of transport to be given artificial limbs. No one was ever turned away, and there was already huge support for the centre from Jaipur Rotarians and the Inner Wheel. Back in the UK, Peter, who died in 1993, set up the Rotary Jaipur Limb Project. Not only would it support the work in Jaipur, more so in the early days, but that has expanded by the establishment of permanent limb centres and temporary limb camps throughout India and in many countries in Africa, and following the earthquake in 2010, in Haiti. "It's very moving when you see the work which goes on," explained Margaret. "It sounds primitive, but this solves their problems. Give someone a limb, you give them a life." In the UK, disability is highly valued. Most people in a wheelchair or who can't walk very well still manage to live a pretty full life, and generally we have good accessibility too. In some of these countries, and certainly in India, if you can't look after your family or play your part in the community, it's regarded as dishonourable. By giving someone a limb, they're able to play a full part in life. They can lead their family, and their dignity is restored. I saw this man who had never had treatment for his twisted limbs after polio. He had to join the queue and was crawling on his hands and knees. People were sitting at desks and he was on the ground, and there's no dignity in that. To give someone that ability to stand is amazing. Lack of an arm or a leg can be tough anywhere, but in poorer parts of the world it is especially tough. Some are born with congenital conditions, others may be casualties of accidents, disease or infection. The World Health Organization estimates there are 30 million people who require prosthetic limbs, braces or other mobility devices, yet less than 20% have them. The Jaipur limb was developed at the Mahavir Hospital, a clever combination of wood and various densities of rubber, vulcanized into a realistic-looking brown foot. The below-knee prosthesis is built from durable polyethylene pipes. These limbs are hard-wearing, lasting for up to 4 years if worn with a shoe. In the Western world, the cost for replacing a limb would reach thousands of pounds. The Jaipur technology means that limbs can be made and fitted for as little as £50, yet able to cope with rugged environments and cultural needs. "In India," said Margaret, "the recipients have got to fit in with their culture, be able to sit cross-legged or walk through water or a paddy field." Rotary Jaipur Limb has facilitated temporary limb camps all over India to reach out to those who can't reach a permanent centre. The biggest is in Bangalore every January for 10 days, supported by Bangalore Peenya Rotary. There are also permanent centres using the Jaipur technology, which have been established in Delhi, Mysore and parts of Kerala, for example. One of the latest developments is the use of 3D printed technology to produce limbs. Measurements can be taken remotely, inputted into a computer, and using a 3D printer, limbs can be produced and dispatched back to the point of origin. This is a much more cost-effective way of ensuring more people are helped. It's not only in India where the project is reaping results. West Africa has been the focus of a number of permanent centres, and a new project is being established in Ethiopia. And it's in Ethiopia where Jaipur Limb is using the latest technology to help it cope with COVID-19. Whenever the charity opens a new workshop or limb centre, the technicians who will make the limbs are trained. In the early days in India, technicians from the Jaipur Limb Centre would travel to each new location to pass on their knowledge to a new set of trainees. However, the pandemic has made travel difficult, if not impossible. At the Gondar Hospital in Ethiopia, manager Roger White came up with a brilliant solution to the problem. Iristic produce industrial smart glasses, which are not just spectacles, but are connected to an Android phone. By using these special glasses, trainers can now demonstrate what the trainees need to learn without having to travel to their location while they watch on a TV or laptop. With their use, there's a 60% cost saving over face-to-face training. Initially, the smart glasses are being used to train new technicians at the Gondar Centre, but life will have changed forever after COVID. Margaret explained, "We're now holding meetings using Zoom or similar software, which would have meant considerable travel costs. The money we're saving can be put to better use in giving new limbs and lives to amputees by distance training. The possibilities are endless. We're beginning to run limb camps and centres in remote areas where measurements are taken and sent by email to the city where 3D printers print out limbs that will be a perfect fit. They're then posted back to the point of origin. IRIS-STIC will add another effective cost-saving and efficiency-enhancing area to our capabilities, all through technology that a generation ago could not have been dreamt of." By the time of their 25th anniversary in 2009, Rotary Jaipur Limb reckon they had produced 250,000 limbs. Factor in a further decade, and the impact is immense. As charities fight for support, the challenge for Rotary Jaipur Limb is to continue the work they're doing, and to achieve this, more funds are needed. They're looking for more ambassadors, speakers, and marketing experts, plus more clubs to take financial ownership of a project for the charity, or to adopt a workshop to ensure its sustainability. There are a number of projects that can't proceed because of lack of funds. Asked why she continues the work first started by her husband, Margaret admits that the visits to India focus her attention. "I did it in the first place because I was asked to," she said. "But having been there, it's so rewarding to see how you give them back their dignity. You give them their independence, their mobility, their normality. You give them a new life again. It's just very rewarding. And you can do this for just £50. For more information, visit rotaryjaipurlimb.org.uk.
Literacy: How Rotarians Can Help. Author Sheila Moore reflects how we can all rekindle the love of literacy to our children. A friend who read sat on the stairs with a toddler on a home start visit, arrived the next week to find the little one sitting on the stairs waiting for her story. We often hear educators, politicians and others talk about literacy. Literacy became important when, after the revised national curriculum was introduced in 2000, it became apparent that many children were progressing to secondary school without the basic skills they needed to learn successfully. Even more disturbing was the fact that there were around 7 million adults unable to read, write and communicate successfully. The cost to the country was thought to be around £2.5 billion. Adults were being cut off from opportunities to work, helping their families learn, and were disadvantaged in many ways. Literacy programmes were introduced into schools and colleges to help improve the situation. However, the literacy hour or lesson did not always encourage children to enjoy English, and the skills were not always transferred to learning in other subjects. Much has improved over the years, thanks to good teaching in our schools and colleges. There is still room for progress, especially in schools which are experiencing difficulties because of their local situation, problems attracting staff, and lack of parental support. This is where Rotarians can help to ensure that such schools are well supported and given the resources they need to help their pupils' literacy skills develop. A wise man once said, "Education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world." He was Nelson Mandela. It is thought that 1 in 11 children from disadvantaged backgrounds are unlikely to own a book or be read to. Currently, adults in their mid-50s perform better than many 16 to 24-year-olds. This is a concern as we need a skilled workforce to progress our society. Children who enjoy reading aged 10 years old can have a higher reading age than their peers, a longer life expectancy, and better mental health. The current pandemic and time spent out of school will have made the gap between those who can read well and have access to IT to do their lessons much wider when they return to school. Those who suffered through lockdowns mentally, socially, and who are grieving will need much more support to ensure their life chances are not blighted. This is a great responsibility for us as a society and as Rotarians who support our communities. How can we as Rotarians support children, young people and adults to develop their literacy skills? What projects can we instigate or support while slowly getting back to our meetings and assessing the needs of schools and individuals? One way is to support libraries. Schools have been starved of funds to develop their libraries over the years. They have lost their librarians and their stock of books has probably not grown greatly either. The types of books needed will include those that help pupils improve their well-being, as well as non-fiction and fiction. There are the straightforward things to do, such as offering funds for the purchasing of books, going into schools and running book clubs, hearing children read, talking to them about their hopes and dreams. For adults, helping with writing skills for CVs and other work-related objectives are important. In other words, befriending institutions in your area and supporting their literacy projects where you can. I expect some will remember the excitement of going to the library or the mobile library. Libraries are losing funding and mobile libraries are few and far between. What about Rotarians in their districts looking into developing mobile libraries that can visit local schools and loan books to pupils? A project that could involve the community refurbishing a coach or single-decker bus no longer needed by a company. It might just be the vehicle to carry hope to young readers. Stories, non-fiction books that children read or have read to them can make a real difference to their futures. Grants would surely be available to such a project. It could attract new members who would see Rotary in action and, more importantly, support in a positive way the literacy needs of our children and young people. Starting early helps. Babies watch and learn from an early age. You can never show them a picture book too soon. They will pat the picture, enjoy sitting on your knee, listening to you talking about the pictures. They will point out objects, turn pages, and as they get older, begin to understand what they're looking at. I remember a walk in the country with our son, riding on his daddy's shoulders, suddenly beginning to make baaing sounds. We had read him the Ladybird Farm Animals book. He had seen some sheep in a field and made a connection. A friend who read sat on the stairs with a toddler on a home start visit, arrived the next week to find the little one sitting on the stairs waiting for her story. Encouraging parents to read with their children is a wonderful thing to do for any family. As a writer of education resources and children's stories, I often put a "Did you know" section in my children's stories, as in The Plastic Warrior. A story that shows an individual can make a difference. Maybe this story might inspire a child to help litter pick on a beach or in a park. Who knows? Information: rotarygbi.org/magazine. Volunteer Expo lands with a bang. The virtual stage was set. After almost 3 years of planning, the virtual doors flung open for Volunteer Expo Online last month. James Bolton and Louise Smith, two members of the event team, look back at a successful event and innovation for Rotary. A knockout main stage. Volunteering is an adventure, and the event kicked off with a speaker who knows a thing or two about that. Broadcaster Ben Fogle shared how volunteering to protect sea turtles with the US Peace Corps inspired his most profound voluntary experience as one of 36 people creating an isolated society in the Outer Hebrides for the TV show Castaway in 2000. Ben also championed why volunteering is important for young people, calling for it to be integrated into the national curriculum. Without a doubt, it would be on there for me. I cannot reiterate enough how much my early voluntary work changed me as a person. Volunteering was so integral to building my own confidence. Where I came short when it came to academics and sports, volunteering was something which I felt ownership over. It was something I could do. I felt very proud doing it. Engaging and supporting young people was a theme across both days of main stage speakers. Boxing legend Frank Bruno highlighted how his foundation offers a bespoke program for teenagers who are perhaps struggling. By engaging in a mix of exercise and healthy discussion, Frank hopes those who enroll will enjoy a similar path to him and a positive route away from mental health problems. BBC Radio 1 presenter Katie Thistleton, herself a passionate mental health campaigner for young people, gave a powerful and brave account of her own battles with anxiety. Actor Brooke Kinsella, no doubt, had viewers at home welling up as she told the emotional account of her younger brother Ben, who was murdered in a knife attack. Making the decision to volunteer, you'll not only be changing lives, but you'll be saving them too, she said. And you couldn't fail to be inspired by 17-year-old Amy Meek, one half of the charity Kids Against Plastic, who gave an informative and passionate plea on the need for environmental sustainability. The volunteering landscape. Almost all aspects of our lives changed during the pandemic, and it's the same for the volunteer sector. 12.4 million people volunteered during the pandemic, with 4.6 million of those doing so for the first time. Sarah Vibart, Catherine Johnston, and Matt Hyde, chief executives of NCVO, Royal Voluntary Service, and the Scouts respectively, all painted a positive picture of the volunteering landscape with a real opportunity ahead of us. We need to find lots of different avenues for volunteers to come through, said Catherine during her presentation. Traditional volunteering is still absolutely at the forefront of what we want people to be doing. Equally, there is a whole cohort out there who want less commitment. It is incumbent on us to direct people to where their time can be best used and have the highest impact for them and their community. Bringing the event to life. The concept of Volunteer Expo was first conceived in 2018, transforming Rotary GB&I's annual conference into a public-facing volunteering show. It was clearly something the sector was crying out for. The gap and the appetite were there. But as with bringing any idea to fruition, the road is never an easy one, and you can't imagine a bump being much bigger than a global pandemic. After a postponement in 2020 and hopes of reconvening for a live event in 2021 dashed, the team, all working remotely until just 2 weeks before the event, were swapping fixtures and fittings for pixels and pop-ups as the event pivoted to become a solely virtual experience. But for us, the buzz and sometimes the stress of a live event was very much there. With a studio built at our support centre in Ulster, we welcomed most speakers on site to not only ensure as delivered as authentic a connection as possible between the speakers, our host Dave King, and our audience, but also to match the standard of interactivity and engagement on offer in the exhibit hall and workshop hub. And of course, there were the logistics of making the environment COVID secure for everyone involved to contend with. As an organisation and a team, our vision was a show celebrating all things volunteering, We wanted to create a positive environment where people could find volunteer opportunities to suit them. We provided a platform not just for Rotary, but for 63 amazing volunteer organisations to shout about what they do best. We feel like we achieved that vision. Now, our attentions turn to 2022, where we absolutely hope to be welcoming you in person to Volunteer Expo Live on the 6th to the 8th of May at the NEC Birmingham. YouTube. Catch up with sessions on demand on our YouTube channel from the 8th of June. 5,500 tickets booked. Of those, 60% were non-Rotary members. 18,000 visits to virtual exhibition stands. 90% surveyed visitors said the event experience was good or very good. I think Rotary have done the most incredible job and put on a first-class 2 days of fantastic content. Matt Hyde, CEO, Scouts. Tales of a Reading Volunteer. Playwright Joan Greening has written a number of plays which have appeared on television and on stage, including the Edinburgh Festival. She has been at the heart of a reading scheme for children at Northwood School in Middlesex. 10 years ago, I was looking for other ways my Rotary Club could assist the community, and it occurred to me that helping children to read would be in line with one of the Rotary areas of focus, literacy. I put the idea to my Rotary Club, Elthorn Hillingdon, and several of our members volunteered. We were given basic training, and then once a week we would go into Northwood School to sit with a child for 40 minutes and assist with their reading. The child would be assessed at the beginning of the year and again at the end. The difference which paired reading made to the majority of the children was remarkable. Their grade shot up and their aspirations were widened. Before the paired reading, one child, when asked what she wanted to do, said, "I don't want to do anything." That child is now a police officer. We read a variety of books, including Wuthering Heights, The 39 Steps, David Copperfield, and Oscar Wilde's The Canterville Ghost, which is a huge favourite. In fact, any ghost story seems to be very popular. We also read books by modern authors, and sometimes children's writers come in to talk to the students. Volunteers have always helped in many other ways. They have filled gaps where grandparents have been missing by teaching core morals and standards of expectations. They've been able to help children for whom English is a foreign language by explaining our culture. It can be very difficult for a child when they're speaking another language at home. They have been able to relieve staff to do other work, and children have appreciated an outsider coming into the school and taking an interest in them. The volunteers often speak about their own travels and enthralling tales. It is useful when reading about another country to get an atlas out and show the child. One boy recently was amazed that I had been to the United States. It was his ambition to go one day. I was able to tell him some stories of my travels. Touchingly, students often come and thank the volunteers years later. They realise the value that comes from being able to read well. COVID has stalled our work and most children have been working at home. Key workers' children have been in school, and as soon as I was vaccinated, I offered to go in and help. There were 3 children who were identified as having low literacy skills. I went in once a week and had a socially distanced reading session with them. They really enjoyed the change and were keen for this arrangement to continue. Anne Underwood, the chief librarian who arranges this scheme, said, "I have a feeling in other schools, students with low literacy scores could be left to just muddle through. A fondness and respect develops between the reader and the volunteer, and the patience shown by the volunteer is remarkable. We would be lost without them all." Information, rotarygbi.org. Mm-hmm.
Creating a Dementia-Friendly Society by editor Dave King. Currently, around 850,000 people in the UK suffer with dementia, including one in every 14 people over the age of 65. There can be few who've not been touched in some way by dementia, as a sufferer, a carer, or through a family member or friend. In 2016, Cowbridge Rotary in the Vale of Glamorgan in Wales decided to do something about it. They began their project to create a dementia-friendly Cowbridge to provide support to those in town and local area who are living with dementia and their carers. The project was all about partnering with a number of different agencies and organisations to coordinate, and in late 2019, in line with criteria laid down by the Alzheimer's Society, Cowbridge was recognised as a dementia-friendly town. Cowbridge Rotary has been essential, providing leadership, support and funding as part of a small dementia-friendly Cowbridge steering group. One successful initiative has been supplying Rotary dementia-friendly mats to businesses and other organisations. Staff attend 40-minute-long dementia awareness sessions and then put this into practice to ensure that their businesses and organisations apply dementia-friendly principles. This includes ensuring that dementia sufferers visiting their business, school or church are treated in a friendly and understanding way. As with other towns across the country, members of the local community run weekly memory jar cafes or golden oldies cinemas. Cowbridge Rotary supports events by arranging transport for those attending, as well as setting up and clearing up at each session. For some Rotarians, however, the most rewarding aspect is taking part by playing games or simply sitting down to talk patiently with those who attend. Interact members from Cowbridge Comprehensive School also help. One Rotarian, David Parsons, has even composed a song called Remember to Remember. Performed by the local Music in Mind group and pupils from Cowbridge Comprehensive School, this has been professionally recorded and committed to YouTube. This was some achievement, and the remarkable song can be heard at the official launch of Remember to Remember with Music in Mind. Cowbridge Rotary has been at the heart of the dementia-friendly project, providing donations to support Alzheimer's research, funding for laptops to support the work of Music in Mind, and also part funding to computerised systems to project tabletop interactive images. These systems have proved a great hit in local care homes and the twice-monthly memory jar cafes. As with many other Rotary projects, the COVID-19 pandemic has inevitably curtailed much of the activity surrounding dementia-friendly Cowbridge. Nonetheless, Cowbridge Rotary is ready to take forward their support for local dementia projects once the situation allows. Creating a Dementia-Friendly Society by editor Dave King. Currently, around 850,000 people in the UK suffer with dementia, including one in every 14 people over the age of 65. There can be few who've not been touched in some way by dementia, as a sufferer, a carer, or through a family member or friend. In 2016, Cowbridge Rotary in the Vale of Glamorgan in Wales decided to do something about it. They began their project to create a dementia-friendly Cowbridge to provide support to those in town and local area who are living with dementia and their carers. The project was all about partnering with a number of different agencies and organisations to coordinate, and in late 2019, in line with criteria laid down by the Alzheimer's Society, Cowbridge was recognised as a dementia-friendly town. Cowbridge Rotary has been essential, providing leadership, support and funding as part of a small dementia-friendly Cowbridge steering group. One successful initiative has been supplying Rotary dementia-friendly mats to businesses and other organisations. Staff attend 40-minute-long dementia awareness sessions and then put this into practice to ensure that their businesses and organisations apply dementia-friendly principles. This includes ensuring that dementia sufferers visiting their business, school or church are treated in a friendly and understanding way. As with other towns across the country, members of the local community run weekly memory jar cafes or golden oldies cinemas. Cowbridge Rotary supports events by arranging transport for those attending, as well as setting up and clearing up at each session. For some Rotarians, however, the most rewarding aspect is taking part by playing games or simply sitting down to talk patiently with those who attend. Interact members from Cowbridge Comprehensive School also help. One Rotarian, David Parsons, has even composed a song called Remember to Remember. Performed by the local Music in Mind group and pupils from Cowbridge Comprehensive School, this has been professionally recorded and committed to YouTube. This was some achievement, and the remarkable song can be heard at the official launch of Remember to Remember with Music in Mind. Cowbridge Rotary has been at the heart of the Dementia Friendly project, providing donations to support Alzheimer's research, funding for laptops to support the work of Music in Mind, and also part funding to computerised systems to project tabletop interactive images. These systems have proved a great hit in local care homes and the twice-monthly Memory Jar cafes. As with many other Rotary projects, the COVID-19 pandemic has inevitably curtailed much of the activity surrounding dementia-friendly Cowbridge. Nonetheless, Cowbridge Rotary is ready to take forward their support for local dementia projects once the situation allows. His Royal Highness Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, a friend of Rotary. Since 1952, Prince Philip was closely connected with Rotary, supporting the organisation's ideals and goals. Following his death in April, Rotarians have paid tribute to the Duke. By editor Dave King. With the death of His Royal Highness the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, in April, aged 99, Rotary lost a true friend. Prince Philip was an honorary Rotarian of the London, Edinburgh and King's Lynn Rotary Clubs, the latter for when the Duke was staying at Sandringham in Norfolk. He was elected as an honorary member of the Edinburgh Club in 1952, to coincide with its Jubilee year. The Scottish Club was founded in 1912. Prince Philip was laid to rest at St George's Chapel, Windsor, in April. He had close connections with both of the Berkshire Towns Rotary Clubs, where he would turn up to meetings unannounced. The Duke became an honorary member of Windsor St George Rotary when it chartered in 1983 and supported a number of their events. President Chris Davies recalled meeting Prince Philip at a fundraising dinner at Windsor Guildhall. He said, "I was a little apprehensive of Prince Philip's perceived public image, of being a bit brusque and intolerant. Nothing of it. He was brilliant. Despite it being a formal dinner, he put everyone at ease." Prince Philip chatted in German to representatives from our German twin club, much to their surprise and pleasure, helped pass around the mints, and then, when I asked club members to stand and toast our guests, he stood up and toasted the guests. I was really touched by that, because he saw himself as a member of our club. At the end, he thanked me for a pleasant evening and quietly walked off back up to the castle. It was as though he'd just popped out to have dinner with some friends. Prince Philip joined Windsor and Eton Rotary as an honorary member in 1957. President Adrian Benge, who works at Windsor Castle, recalled, "I went along to a meeting in 2010, before I became a member, and the Duke just walked in to join the meeting, no one expecting him. I'd seen him in the castle about an hour earlier, and he stopped, looked at me, and asked, 'What are you doing here?' I replied I was coming to the meeting with a view to joining. He shouted to Derek Bishop, who was president, for everyone to, 'Here, quick, sign him up.' But the Duke then said to me, 'Do you not have a club nearer home?' as he knew I lived in Farnborough. I said, 'But I know everyone here, sir.' He replied, 'Well, we can walk over together from the castle then in future.'" The Duke of Edinburgh twice provided forewords for books about Rotary. In 1975, he contributed a piece to a book about the history of Rotary International in Great Britain and Ireland, written by Roger Levy, who was part of the Secretariat staff in the 1960s and 70s. This was written at a time when Rotary was a male-only organisation. The Duke then wrote, "Most people hear about Rotary at some time in their lives, and of course a great many public-spirited men join the clubs and help to make a valuable contribution to society. But how many people, members included, know anything about the origins and development of the clubs, since they were founded by Paul Harris in Chicago in 1905? how many appreciate the unique contribution made to Rotary International by the movement in Britain since it reached this country in 1911. I'm sure that the basic purpose of Rotary, vocational service, is understood by most people. But it is certainly time that the strength and depth and width of this service over the last 70 years should be recorded for present and future members. The very existence of Rotary clubs illustrates a much neglected fact of life. A community can only call itself civilized if all of its members actively and equally share in the responsibilities of citizenship. The domination of one section of the community by another for whatever reason, be it political, doctrinal, economic or social, can never be equated with true, responsible self-government by all members of the community. Rotary has been setting a splendid practical example of unselfish, responsible service for many years, and I hope this book will help to maintain this tradition long into the future. Later in 1984, the Duke of Edinburgh wrote a foreword to David Shelley Nicholls' book, The Golden Wheel. He wrote, "The sheer size of Rotary International in 1984 is impressive. Almost 1 million members in 158 countries are awesome statistics. But they really mean nothing at all unless the members are inspired by Rotary's challenging philosophy expressed by its splendidly simple motto, Service above self." The motto would be irrelevant if there was no selfishness in the world. But the temptation to cheat, to exploit, and to dominate for the sake of personal wealth and power has always been a feature of human existence, and the chances are that it always will be. The significance of Rotary is that it has become one of the most active and effective forces on the lay side of righteousness, cooperation, and goodwill. It provides, therefore, a most powerful encouragement of the potential for good that is in all men, and by doing so, it also acts as a severe restraint on what is evil and corrupt. It is no coincidence that Rotary flourishes in the free and open societies of this world, while it is ruthlessly suppressed under ideological dictatorships. This book may not be the only history of Rotary to be written, but it is probably the first to trace the course of events and to follow the development of an idea at the same time. What comes through is that while fashions and attitudes may vary between countries and over periods of time, the central principle and philosophy of Rotary runs through the whole story, as if it were the track of the golden wheel. For more information, visit rotarygbi.org/magazine.
Rotary Young Citizen Awards go virtual. Outstanding young people have been recognised with Rotary Young Citizen Awards, which went virtual this year with an awards ceremony hosted by BBC TV presenter Ellie Kreisel on May the 22nd. The awards include the Young Citizen Peacemaker Award and Sporting Hero Award. Here's more about the inspirational winners. Eve Conway, founder of the Rotary Young Citizen Awards. 2 7-year-old friends, Ian Musa and Mikhail Ishak from East London, set up a Lemonade for Yemen aid stand when they were 6 outside their home to raise money for Yemen after they heard about the plight of children there who are starving. They thought they might raise £100, but instead they have raised about £100,000 for the Yemen crisis after their story went viral. The friends have even received the support and a generous donation from Angelina Jolie, who contacted them personally. Ian and Mikhail have won gold, blue, Peter badges. The UN World Food Programme has made a video about them, with messages of thanks from the children in Yemen. They were nominated by Redbridge Rotary. 11-year-old Max Woozy has raised more than £532,000 for North Devon Hospice by sleeping in a tent in its garden for over a year from the start of the first lockdown in March 2020. He decided to camp out after his neighbour, Rick Abbott, gave him a tent before he died of cancer and told him to have an adventure in it. Max took on the challenge to fundraise for the hospice which helped Max's family care for Rick before he died of cancer in February 2020. He was nominated by Braunton Kane Rotary. Sisters Sienna and Chiara Hamill, aged 18 and 20, are two Rotaractors from Kenilworth in Warwickshire, whose mother is a senior healthcare professional with a Black, Asian and minority ethnic background. When the pandemic hit, she faced huge difficulties accessing personal protective equipment, despite having a frontline role. Faced with this, Sienna and Chiara decided to do something about it. They set up San Hands UK, a social enterprise community interest company, to manufacture hand sanitizer with a mission to get sanitizer to people who most needed it. Sales have allowed them to give away over 10,000 pieces of PPE to frontline workers across the UK and Ireland. San Hands UK also donates 20% of proceeds to food banks. With profits, the girls invested in mask manufacturing capabilities and now supply full COVID protection packs. They were nominated by the Rotary Club of Rotary Social Innovation. 19-year-old Lani Collis-Phillips has been volunteering for over 5 years at Volunteering Matters. She is involved with the group Women Against Sexual Exploitation and Violence, Speak Up, to raise awareness of domestic abuse, child abuse and sexual violence. Lani is the first young person in Suffolk to become a representative on the local safeguarding board. In 2019, Lani became an I Will UK ambassador for Youth Social Action. She has chaired a number of high-level hashtag #IWill campaign meetings in response to the Black Lives Matter movement, nominated by Ipswich Wolsey Rotary. 16-year-old Poppy McGee, who suffers from epilepsy, started playing the violin age 5 and passed grade 8 with distinction 2 weeks after her 8th birthday. She also started fundraising at the age of 5. After seeing a performance when she was 7 by blind and autistic pianist Derek Pavernici, who inspired the setting up of the Amber Trust, Poppy decided to use her talents to raise thousands of pounds for this charity. She's taken part in workshops run by the Amber Trust, helping to provide music therapy to blind, partially sighted and autistic children, and she mentors young musicians. Poppy was nominated by Mendip Rotary. 14-year-old Alfie Dean set up the Babbicum Pantry outside his home in Devon, using a shelf taken from his bedroom to offer older people the chance to collect essential items during lockdown. He set up a GoFundMe page to help keep the pantry well stocked. The teenager also launched a Christmas appeal, collecting gifts and raising funds to provide 400 Christmas stockings to families in need. Alfie was nominated by Torquay Rotary. Rotary Young Citizen Peacemaker Award winner Shania Kerry Oldham, 20, was spurred into action after a teenager was stabbed in her neighbourhood. She went to help him lying in the street, and what she witnessed left a huge mark on her. Shania vowed to put an end to the increasing amount of violence in the London borough of Newham. She worked with police to act as a liaison between them and young people to improve stop and search perceptions. She is determined to bring about change and reduce the fear amongst teenagers on the streets. Shania is founder of Your Life, More Life CIC and lead youth activism coordinator for The Forefront Project. Shania was nominated by Stratford Rotary. Rotary Young Citizen Sporting Hero Award winner Jemima Browning, 20, started Tadcaster Stingrays, a swimming squad for young people with disabilities at Tadcaster Swimming Pool. Driven by her younger brother Will, who has Down syndrome, it was Jemima's belief that everyone should have the opportunity to enjoy sport. The Tadcaster Stingrays are coached by Jemima and some are now competing in the Special Olympics and the Great Britain Down Syndrome Swimming Group. Jemima and Will were both selected to represent Great Britain on the Special Olympics Inclusive Youth Activation Committee. Jemima was nominated by Leeds Rotary. You too. Watch the inspiring virtual awards ceremony on demand on our YouTube channel.
Well, that's all from us for this June-July issue. We hope you enjoyed it, and do let us know what you think of this audio edition. You can email editor@rotarygbi.org. This Rotary magazine has been presented by Dave King, the Rotary magazine editor, and a team of professional narrators. And all the items in this audio are copyright. A downloadable edition of this audio for visually impaired members can be requested. And the audio magazine is also available to download or stream by visiting the Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland website, whose address is rotarygbi.org/magazine. I'll repeat that address. It's rotarygbi.org/magazine. Thanks for listening, and we hope you can join us for the next audio edition, which will be the August-September issue. Goodbye for now.